All right. We do have a lot of material to cover. Because of that, this is a great task that is set before us. But brethren, I think there's another reason that this is a great task, and that is because of the mindset that some have within the brotherhood today concerning our worship. And in particular for this lesson, what we consider and what the Bible teaches as singing. It is a vitally important subject. Now, I'm amazed at how much Brother Hicks could put in for one lecture and give me 38 minutes. Let me just go over real quickly what he expects of me. Number one, to give the New Testament teaching on God-authorized music in worship. That's number one. Number two, to show that choirs, quartets, and solos are not authorized in our assemblies and therefore sinful. Well, brethren, to say the least, if they're not authorized, they are sinful, period. End of discussion. There's nothing left to be said about that, but we'll talk about it to some degree. Number three, show that congregational singing is what has been authorized and not solos, choirs, and quartets, and so forth. And to show why singing is to be done in worship to God and not such things as ooing and aahing and humming and boo-bop-a-bop-bop and things of that nature. And then, of course, we want to talk about the fact that we are not the weaker brethren when we will not tolerate instrumental music in our worship. I want you to stop and think about this for a moment. Can you think of one place in the Bible, not the New Testament, but in the entire Bible, wherein God considered the people who were doing His will as He had stated to do His will as being weaker brethren? Isn't that ridiculous? Isn't that ludicrous for people to come up to you, and I've had them do it to me? Well, when you get a little bit stronger, you'll be able to tolerate. Well, I hope I don't get any stronger. If that's what it means to tolerate instrumental music and noises with the mouth. And we'll talk about those. Brethren, it is a great task before us because we do have a mindset. Some even within good, faithful members of the body. They ask questions like, well, why do we need this kind of lesson? Don't we already know these things? Haven't we heard these things enough? Well, let me suggest that there are two good reasons why we need to continue to have lectureships on some of these very things that we're doing here. And that I understand that are going to be done in Memphis in 1999. Some of the basics, the fundamentals. Number one reason is that it is scriptural. And number two reason, evidently many today within the Lord's body do not know these things. They evidently have not heard these things enough because they are falling for them hook, line, and sinker. They're taking these things in and presupposing that these things are all right in the sight of God to have solos and choirs and quartets in our assemblies, to make noises with the mouth that do not teach, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But let's talk first about the idea that this is a biblical principle to be reminded of those things that we have been taught. Do you realize that in the Bible, some 260 plus times, we can find the word remember, remembered, remembering, remembrance, remembereth, and akin words to that. 260 times. Now, I don't know what that tells you, but it tells me that God was interested in us remembering the things that He has given us. That's what it tells me. In Numbers chapter 15, verse 39, Moses, by inspiration of God, tells the children of Israel that they are to put a fringe upon the border of their garments. Now listen to the reason. That ye may look upon it and remember the commandments of the Lord. He was giving them something there that would cause them to remember the very teachings that they were to be following. John chapter 14, verse 26. Jesus promised the apostles that the Father would send the Comforter to bring all things to their remembrance. It was important to God the Father to send to the apostles the Holy Spirit that they might be able to remember the teachings of our Lord. It was important. In 2 Peter chapter 1, verses 12 through 13, the Apostle Peter there wrote, "Wherefore I will not be negligent to put you always in remembrance of these things, though you know them, and be established in the present truth. Yea, I think it meet, as long as I am in this tabernacle, to stir you up by putting you in remembrance." Now listen to what the Apostle Peter had to say here. Number one, he considered it to be negligence on his part not to remind the brethren of certain things that he had been teaching them. He says, yes, I understand that you know them, that you are established in these truths, but it is important that you know these things. He said, as long as I am in this physical body, this very one that is penning this letter to you, I think it is meet, that is to say, it is fitting or it is proper to stir you up by putting you in remembrance. Time and time again, we see this concept that it is necessary for us to remember these things. But number two, it is evident that many in the church today really have not learned the truth on this subject of God-authorized music in our worship. Let me give you a point in case. If you haven't seen this, you're in for a treat, and I say that very sarcastically. Jeff Walling was one of the keynote speakers of the 1998 Nashville Jubilee. I believe they promote that as Jubilee 98. And listen to some of the things that he said, and this is the first speech. Jeff Walling gets up and says, just listen. Just listen to the words of this verse. Upon which a duet which is started by a woman and led by a woman is sung with background humming going on all during the progression of the song. During the closing prayer on this first speech, I don't know whether it's day or night, it doesn't really make any difference, but the singers, and I put a question mark after that word singers, because what they did is they began to hum during the prayer that Jeff Walling was leading. That then broke into an invitation song and so on. Only Walling and the on-stage singing group participated in the singing of an invitation song. They're the only ones. Brethren, I don't know how to describe that, but entertainment, plain and simple. Now, on the third night, he brought children onto the stage to sing to the audience. After this song, the instrumental music was played in the background by itself. Next, a solo female singer performed with the instrument behind her, accompanying her. And in the end, the children began to sing with arms in the air, swaying back and forth with the instrumental music while being led by at least two women that I saw on the tape. Now, I have a lot of respect for Brother David Brown, and I asked him about a word I was going to use, and he said, I think it'd be better to use a different one because it's kind of crude, so I'll be kind on that. But brethren, it nauseated me. It genuinely did. The word I was going to use comes from a German word, spuken. I don't think I have to tell you what I was going to use. Sorry, Brother Brown. I had to get that in. That was nauseating, people. It was shameful. What do they think that they were teaching their children by getting up there? By the way, after the children sang, Walling led everybody in applause. What were they teaching those children? Not all of life is worship, but all of worship should be entertainment, maybe. Shame on them. It's ridiculous. It's shameful. Well, let's talk about what the Bible does teach relative to the music that God authorizes in our worship of Him. I think one of the first things that we need to do is we need to allow the Bible to define our terms, not what people want to define them as. It's amazing to me that our liberal brethren are have been doing what our president is doing today, wanting to redefine words to suit themselves so they don't get in trouble. That's what they've been doing for years. But let's let the Bible define for us such terms as seen. In 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verse 15, the Apostle Paul said, I will pray with the Spirit and I will pray with the understanding also. I will sing with the Spirit and I will sing with the understanding also. Now, brethren, there are two elements here that are under consideration. Prayer and singing. And both are elements or acts of worship. Now, in this phrase, with the Spirit, I will sing with the Spirit. I see this as being very synonymous with, almost a parallel to, John chapter 4 and verse 24, that we must worship God in spirit. That is to say, that we must worship in sincerity, from the heart. It cannot be hypocritical. But then he talks about singing with understanding. Now that word understanding is defined for us as the act of comprehension. It must be intelligible. In other words, we've got to be able to understand, comprehend what has been uttered or what has been said. And thus we understand that our prayers and our singing must be genuine. They cannot be vain. They cannot be hypocritical. They must be sincere before God, but brethren, they must also be done with understanding. And that, remember that as we go through this. Then in Ephesians chapter 5, 18 and 19, in the parallel passage of Colossians chapter 3 and verse 16, the Apostle Paul says, be not drunk with wine wherein is excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and in hymns and in spiritual songs, making melody in your hearts to the Lord. Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. You know, I was afraid there for a while that Brother Wyatt was going to just do mine. All I had to do was get up and say what he said. But he just touched on, and I appreciate that. But brethren, we need to understand here that what is being talked about here, both in the Ephesian letter and the Colossian letter, that the Holy Spirit through Paul expresses the need for us to speak to teach, to admonish each other. And in each case, there is plural action indicated. In other words, what we're saying here is that we are to speak to ourselves. We are to teach and admonish one another. You see, the mode of speaking and teaching and the admonishing is clearly spelled out for us. And that is in our singing. Please note here that the only other instrument that is mentioned other than the human voice which is doing the singing is the human heart, making melody in your hearts unto the Lord. Singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. Brother, let's talk now about some of the errors that are being foisted upon us in the church today. And I use that word foist because it means to surreptitiously pass off a fraud as being genuine. That is what they are attempting to do. They're trying to take fraudulent form of what they call singing and trying to pass it off as genuine worship of God. How ridiculous and how sad it is. They equate just any noise that they make with the mouth as singing. And I emphasize the word any noise. And I believe Brother Wyatt pointed out also the concept of hand clapping. They do that as well. But solos and choirs and groups and quartets are just acceptable to them as congregational singing. In fact, some are even maintaining that the only truly acceptable method of singing comes in the form of solo singing in the assembly. And we'll deal with that here in just a little bit. But I have a question for you, folks. Where did we get all this junk from? And I say we, and I'm talking about the liberal brethren within the church. Where did it come from? Where did this mess start up from? Well, I have a suggestion, and it may not be the traditional view of an antinomian. But, brethren, they are antinomians. They do not believe in law. That's where we're getting it from. You see, if these people are not at a faith-only or grace-only position yet, they are quickly headed there. And we know that people like Max Lucado, Reuel Shelley, have already stood up and said that they believe that they are saved by grace alone. That you do not add one whit to your own salvation. Now, they've already made that point. They've already said that. I thought real hard about how to say this. But brethren, we had a pumpkin head that came to the ACU lectures this year who can't figure out what he believes we're saved by. He got up and he said, we are saved by grace alone, through faith alone, by Christ alone. I listened to that tape, I turned it off, and I turned around to my bookshelf, I got my dictionary out, I thought, Royce, you have missed it on the word alone somewhere down the line. No, I hadn't. It means to be by oneself. How many people in here could say, right now, I'm in this auditorium alone? Well, according to this man, you could. Now, you know, I'm not a scholar. I don't have my master's and I don't have my Ph.D. Closest thing I got to a Ph.D. is when my dad taught me how to dig post holes. And then where I come from, in Central Texas, that's rocky ground. That's hard work, folks. I may be just a tad on the ignorant side. I don't mean to be. I'm trying to study my way out of that. But I understand the difference between alone and with somebody. I get that. I'm not that ignorant, believe it or not. And I'm just ignorant enough to tell you that I'm not that ignorant. Well, brethren, I don't understand this exactly, other than the fact that if there is no law, then you cannot worship God incorrectly. There's no way on earth that you can sin worshiping God. And I may be wrong about that. I'm trying to remember. I believe it was the Alan Hires given O. Blakely debate, where Brother Hires pressed the Christian church preacher given O. Blakely to the point in that in that debate in which he actually said that you cannot worship God wrongly. You cannot worship Him in vain. I believe that was the debate I'm thinking about. Now, in the middle of this thing, he caught what he had said and he kind of grinned wryly. And he began to weasel himself or attempt to weasel himself out of what he had said because he realized how stupid it was. But brethren, that's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible teaches that we are under law. In Matthew chapter 15, verses 7 through 9, Jesus said, well hath Isaiah prophesied of you, saying, this people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth, they honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Now listen to what he says. In vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrine the commandments of men. You see, the commandments is parallel to law. And if it's vain worship to follow the laws, the teaching, the commandments of men, then it stands to reason that it is lawful for us to follow the teachings and commandments of God. Common sense tells us that. In 1 John chapter 3 and verse 4, whosoever committeth sin transgresseth also the law. Why, John? For sin is the transgression of the law. Yes, we are under law. Are we saved by faith? Yes, we are. Are we saved by grace? Yes, we are. Are we saved by Christ? Yes, we are. How about baptism? Yes, we are. And on that list to go. But, brethren, we are under law. I think a lot of our problems have come from the fact that these people have become antinomians. They don't believe in law. Which gives them a lot of latitude, by the way. Would give us all a lot of latitude if we didn't have any law, wouldn't it? We could do what we wanted to do. But now let's quickly look at the fallacies of these current digressions. Let's look at the foolishness of them, and I don't know how else to say it, but that's what it is. Let's talk about the noise that some offer up as worship to God. And again, I don't have another word to use for that stuff, but noise. Now, we need to remember, we've got to go back just a moment and remember some of the things that we've talked about. Definitions, and these are important. The New Testament defines singing with such terminology, such words as understanding, speaking, teaching, admonishing. The understanding means to comprehend. It must be intelligible. To speak means to utter words with the ordinary voice, to communicate ideas. That's the idea of speaking. To teach is simply to instruct. To admonish is the putting in mind, usually in the form of a mild reproof or rebuke. Now, these are all important. Every one of them are important. Brethren, instruments of music, vocal noises that mimic instruments of music, humming, oohing, and aahing, and all other non-singing vocal music does not meet the criteria as set out in the New Testament when we let the Bible define its own terms. Such things as oohing and aahing and humming and whistling, and if we add to that hand clapping, or the bop, 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 bops, and the boom, boom, booms that you're hearing now with the a cappella vocal band type of mess, simply do not and cannot teach, admonish, and speak to anyone. Now, if I were to stand up here right this very moment and then begin to break out into humming, I would venture to guess that there would not be one person in this audience that could honestly tell me what I meant by that. First place, if I broke out into humming, chances are I didn't mean anything by it. No words, no communication, and yet that's what they want to do. And to believe otherwise is fanciful at the very best, and it's plain right down right dishonest at the worst. It plain and simply is dishonest to believe that these types of noises actually teach, actually admonish, actually speak to one another. Why? Because they're unintelligible. They don't communicate ideas. They do not instruct. And they do not exhort, reprove, rebuke, or anything else by putting into mind. Simply put, brethren, they have no Bible authority. There's no place for them. Why are groups, why are choirs and soloists and quartets and groups of things of this nature unscriptural? Well, I guess we could save a lot of time, give you a little bit of time back, by simply saying, well, they don't meet the requirements as set out in the New Testament. They too lack Bible authority, and that would probably be a very quick answer. But let's explain why they don't. Now, remember, Paul instructed the Christians both at Ephesus and Colossae to sing, to speak one to another. Speak to yourselves in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. Paul's commandments required reciprocation. And any man who has ever worked with power tools and worked around the house or are out on the job site and knows what a reciprocating saw is understands the process, don't you? The process of reciprocating saw, and you ladies understand it if you sew. When that needle goes down and then comes up, it's a reciprocating process. In other words, it's a two-way street. It's got to be. By nature, it's got to be. Reciprocation is necessary. Now, I've got a question for you. What part of Paul's commandments am I keeping if I let the choir, the soloist, the quartet, the group, or whatever, entertain me? What have I done? Where is the reciprocation? Oh, I might be able to say, well, I was getting something out of it. But, brethren, I cannot tell you that I was giving something back. Because if I'm sitting there like a pickle, a bump on a pickle, I'm not giving anything back. Not one thing. Not one single solitary thing. Brethren, this attraction in recent years to soloists and quartets and groups is nothing more than self-gratification through entertainment. They want to feel good about themselves by allowing someone else to sing to them, to entertain them. That's all it really boils down to. Now, what about the argument that says there is no authority, that there is no authority for the concept of congregational singing, but rather there is an idea of solo singing? That's what we ought to be doing. Well, the argument comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verses 15 and 26. Remember there, Paul said, "I will sing with the Spirit, and I will sing with the understanding also." And then verse 26, he says, "How is it then, brethren, when you come together, every one of you hath a psalm?" Well, first of all, what they're doing is they are assuming what they should be proving. We need to realize that psalms were authoritative writings. And in some cases, that which we have within the Scriptures, they are inspired writings. We also have psalms, or at least they've been categorized as psalms, that have been written by mere human beings without God-given inspiration. So we have authoritative writings come in the form of psalms. Now many, if not most of these psalms were never put to music. So they assume that the psalm that they read about in verse 26 of 1 Corinthians 14 is singing and not just simply the reading of the psalm before the congregation. They're assuming that first of all. They are assuming that in verse 15, that when it talks about "I will sing," the singular nature of that, that they are implying that one person and only one person at a time can sing with the Spirit and understanding. And therefore they say, see, we should be doing solos, not congregational singing. Well, I suppose that if we really wanted to push them to the limit on this thing, since this was the Apostle Paul writing, and Paul said, "I will sing with the Spirit and I will sing with the understanding also," we could push them to the point that nobody but Paul could do that. If they're trying to make this a singular thing and to say that that was the only thing that can be done, well, then I'm going to push them into the corner and say that only Paul could do the singing. And since Paul's not here anymore, we don't have license to sing at all. Well, isn't that ridiculous? Isn't that absurd? Of course it is. It's nonsense. But the truth of the matter is, that's what they try to do. They're trying to make this thing an individual thing because Paul said, "I will sing." Because he said such things as that every one of you hath a song. And they don't understand that what they're doing here is that Paul, being in a situation of writing to the whole church and not just the individuals, they rest the Scriptures to their own destruction. See, Paul's writing to the whole church. Otherwise, we could go to the point to say, well, see, he's doing it. He's the only one that can do it. Paul's writing to them. No, brethren, we can't do that. They can't do it either. Paul is writing to them about how they should be edifying one another. That's the context. They were to do it by speaking and praying and singing from the heart. Words that can be understood by the assembly. Brethren, the context of 1 Corinthians 14, 15, 26 simply does not support solos in our assemblies. They don't do it, and they can wrestle with it, and they can fight with it all they want, but all they're doing is wresting the Scriptures to their own destruction. Brethren, we need to realize that we are a royal priesthood, that we are a holy nation. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. And that being the case, to allow someone else to offer up our honor and our praise to God with the fruit of the lips is to be negligent in our priestly responsibilities. We don't have the authority to sit back and let somebody do our job for us. It was a valid point that was brought up just a moment ago, a little bit ago, that this is necessary thing in worship, that we give in worship, Because only when we give in worship can we honestly say that we get something out of it. You know, it's really interesting to me that a number of years ago, I was teaching on a Wednesday night a junior high school class. The youngest, I believe, was a sixth grade boy, and the oldest was a sophomore girl in that class. We had some that were baptized and some that were not baptized. And I decided one of the good things that we needed to do is to go back and do some of the fundamental teachings on worship, on the plan of salvation. Fundamental teachings so that these young people would be getting a double dose, not just from the pulpit and having to listen to me, but having to listen to me in class too. But they were going to be getting double doses of the basics of Christianity so that they could be rooted and grounded in the faith. And when we got through with this class on this particular Wednesday night, in which we talked about the very definitions that we talked about a moment ago, the concept of what the Bible teaches about singing, do you realize that not one of these children missed the point? Every one of them got it. When asked a simple question, in the place of singing with words that teach, can we hum? Can we whistle? Can we ooh and ah to a child? They said, no, we cannot. And I asked them why. Because the Bible says that we are to sing, and it teaches us what singing is. And that is not singing. They understood the concept of the authority principle. They understood it. Tell me why it is that we have people today in the church who have their masters and their PhDs and they don't get it. Can somebody explain that to me after this is all over with? Because I don't understand how they can't get it. When a child from the sixth grade, and I don't know what that is, what, 12 years old? My children are too far gone. I don't remember that. They're up and married. But say 12 years old to about 15 to 16 years old, if they can get it and they don't have their masters, they don't have their PhDs, well, they're not even out of public schools yet. And they understood that. Go back to the attitude in the heart. There's where the problem is. The Bible teaches us plainly and simply what is involved in New Testament worship, and in particular for this lesson, what is involved in singing. And when a child can understand it, but we have people in our colleges and our universities and those who have graduated from them are now out there preaching in various areas and they don't understand plain simple English, I am worried. I'm worried about where these congregations are going to be headed. I'm worried about where the church as a whole is headed. Brethren, there is simply no authority for special music in our worship of Jehovah. You cannot find it. It is nothing more than our members wanting to be, as the problem was in Samuel's day in 1 Samuel chapter 8, like the nations, only now wanting to be like the denominations round about us. That's all it really boils down to. Like so many other hellish innovations from the religious world that our brethren have blindly adopted, this too is just one more attempt of the unity in diversity brethren to want and cause you to blend in and lose your distinctiveness as the Lord's body. That's what they're out for. I haven't been here through the whole thing, but brethren, the idea of change agents, and that's their ideas and their words, they do have an agenda. They claim they don't, but they have an agenda, and that is to change the Lord's body into nothing more than a denomination. I appreciate your good time and your attention, and I do certainly hope and pray that the rest of these lectures are profitable to you, and I'm sure they will be. Thank you very much.